Welcome to the weekend edition of the Undisputed Podcast. I'm your host, Jenny Taft. Today's podcast features all the best segments from this week's slate of Undisputed. With in-depth interviews and discussions, we have a lot to talk about heading into next week. Skip, Shannon, let's get to it.
We got news on two fronts involving Native American nicknames in sports. Today, the Washington Redskins have announced that they have retired their nickname, but we don't have any word on what the new name will be, while the Atlanta Braves say they've decided not to change their nickname but are going to take a close look at their Tomahawk Chop fan celebration. So, Shannon, are you surprised that Dan Snyder finally made the decision to change the name in Washington?
No. And, Skip, I said it when it came down and we started talking about who was requesting that he change this name. I said, Skip, it won't be long now. Because you look at the FedEx, Pepsi, Nike request a name change. Mm-hmm. Amazon say, we're going to stop selling your merchandise. Mm-hmm. Walmart, Target says, yeah, we're going to stop selling your merchandise also. Skip, he had no choice. So no matter how much, Skip, let me pull this up right quick, Skip. Because I wrote this, because Daniel Snyder, he like, Skip, you remember what he said? He wrote said this, I think it was like May of 2013.
Yep.
We will never change the name of the team. As a lifelong Redskin fan, and I think that Redskin fans understand the great tradition, what it's all about, what it means. So we feel pretty fortunate to just be working on next season. We will never change the name, and that's simple. Never. You can use caps.
He put it N-E-V-E-R, all caps.
Yeah. A cap, but yep. Never a cap.
Mm-hmm.
Skip, no business can afford to lose $50-100 million a year in advertising over an extended period of time without it having long-term ramifications. And that's what, and FedEx says, if you don't change the name, we're taking our name off the stadium. It's as simple as that.
Yep.
And so he had no choice. Skip, he fought it because the people in the beginning that requested it were fans. And he's like, y'all gonna come to the game anyway, so and I give y'all a couple of months, and y'all forget all about it. We win a game here or there, yep. And you'll be cheering us on again. But when these heavy hitters said, you know what, change it or else, he had no choice. He thought about it. Well, you know, we're gonna look into it. We're gonna do it. What you need to look into? You have a name that people deem is offensive, that's derogatory, and the Native American says it's a slur, it's racist. Okay, what do you need? What internal investigation do you need to give? Look at to say, so is it really that? They said it, move on. So, Skip, I am not surprised. Now, I might be a little surprised that it happened so quick. Skip, we're not even 2 weeks. And they're like, yeah, we got a new name.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not surprised in the least that it happened, because when these, this is almost $1 trillion in corporations value. And they say, you need to do something with this name or we got to go.
Yep.
He had no choice. Had no choice. And guess what, Skip? All that being said, it was the right thing to do.
It's been the right thing to do for years and years and more years. I have run out of air on national TV saying this is just wrong. No matter how you look at it, whether you consider it just an all-out racial slur,
right,
or just a derogatory sort of defamatory term,
correct,
used toward Native Americans,
mm-hmm,
that goes way back to the days in which we, as white people, white settlers, white government, declared war on the Native Americans,
right,
it's just wrong to use it as the derogatory or racial slur nickname of a National Football League team in our nation's capital. I can't make that up,
mm-hmm,
but it happened.
Right.
And you know the story, and I don't want to go too much back. The original owner, George Preston Marshall, mm-hmm, founder of the pro football team. This was back in Boston days. They were the original. They were called Boston Braves because the baseball team was Boston Braves that they shared a stadium with.
Right.
Then they moved to Fenway, and they shared occupancy with the Red Sox. And George Preston Marshall, who turned into one of the great bigots in the history of the National Football League, said, wait, let's
change your nickname. Well, he was already that. He just exposed himself once he gave that name.
Yeah, but later he was the last to integrate.
Yes.
1962 it took him to.
Yep.
He said, how about, Red Sox. Let's go from Braves to Redskins. Well, wait a second, that's derogatory. So he goes out and hires a coach who has some sort of Native American ancestry to try to sell it to the populace. And it doesn't work there. At least it didn't sell.
Right.
And they moved the team to D.C. and you know the rest of the story. Mm-hmm. So the reason I'm pleasantly shocked by this change so quickly, to your point, is because I went through that period in 2013, 2014, in which we talked about it every day, all day on television, till I couldn't talk anymore about it because it looked like we had reached another turning point. They were going to lose their trademark. The threat was, we will take away your trademark if you don't change your nickname.
Right.
This is 7 years ago and then 6 years ago as it kept going on and on.
Right.
So Dan Snyder went on a national campaign visiting tribal chiefs from D.C. all the way to North Dakota. And he gave reportedly about $4 million to Native American causes. And he came back and got some of his former players to become his mouthpieces. Mm-hmm. And one of them, Chris Cooley, came on the show I used to do on ESPN.
Right.
And just beat the table about how the Native Americans are not offended by this. And then they got backed up by that Washington Post poll. Remember that?
Right.
9 out of 10 Native Americans surveyed.
Right.
It was 504 total out of about 5 million that we have in our nation. 504, 9 out of 10 say, we're not offended.
Well,
they were older.
Did they come from the tribe that got that $4 million? Because it was reported, Skip, that he gave that one bulk sum.
He did.
And has given them nothing since.
And you're probably right about that. But he kept campaigning, we're honoring Native Americans with this nickname. Well, wait a second. What's the origin of it? I know I grew up watching what were called cowboy and Indian movies, and that was about as derogatory a term as you could use. Those low-down, no-good Redskins, we're going to get them, right? Well, come on. You can't call a pro football team that.
And here's the thing. Skip, if you're from outside the culture, you don't get to determine what's a term of endearment.
Mm-hmm.
You don't get to... Well, I'm not Native American, but I think it's a term of endearment, so I'm going to call you that, and it's going to be that.
Mm-hmm.
You don't get to decide. The culture from within decides what is a term of endearment.
Right. I'm with you. So then what happened in 2014? We kept waiting for the new change.
Right.
It got hung up in court, and it hung, and it hung, and it hung, and it went away.
It disappeared.
And he had friends in very high places because he's in D.C. He's in the nation's capital.
Yes.
And now... I'm pretty sure he has another friend in a very high place.
Highest of places.
Speaking of chiefs, this is the commander-in-chief, right?
Correct.
And I was assuming that back by the commander-in-chief right now, he would sort of pay lip service, we're considering changes, and then kind of hope that the Black Lives Matter movement sort of blows over and quietens down, and then he could slip it back under the door again. Oh, we decided... It's still okay.
Right.
Right?
Right. He tried.
He tried.
The president came out and said there's nothing wrong with that name. It's a term.
Okay, but to your point, I just read last night that there was a letter signed by 87 investors and shareholders with a total worth of $620 billion. This letter was sent to FedEx, PepsiCo, and Nike asking them to stop doing business with the team unless that name was changed. Well, now money is not just talking, it's shrieking, right? And Dan Snyder is getting his ears just pierced by the shriek where he says, uh-oh, now I'm really in trouble. Mm-hmm. And obviously, one of his minority investors is the FedEx president, and that's the naming rights on the stadium.
FedEx Field.
Okay, you're going to lose the naming rights? Well, you could probably say, well, I'll find somebody who will do it. But after a while, it started to look bad, and then it went to worse because... This is what's happening with this country right now. This country is just in a new mood, and it's a great new mood of, hey, that's got to stop.
Got it.
And it started with all the racist symbols and racist behavior.
Mm-hmm.
No, we're calling you out. We're taking that down.
Right.
It's that time. And then we turn to the Native American. Well, wait a second. Well, that's the most glaring example of racism against Native Americans.
Correct.
To me, as far as a big public glaring example.
Right.
Well, it's like taking that statue down. Let's take that one down too, right?
Yeah, and they should, Skip. And I think the thing is that Daniel Snyder started to realize if it doesn't make dollars, it doesn't make sense. C-E-N-T-S and S-E-N-S-E. It didn't make sense to him, Skip.
Okay.
And they say money talks, but cash screams. So you're talking about $620 billion. That's what these companies were worth. And some of these were, you know, FedEx had his name on the building. What are they paying, Skip? $15, $20 million a year? Pepsi probably was in the building. Nike selling their merchandise. Amber, Do we need to mention anything about Amazon? Jeff Bezos worth about $200 billion. So he had no choice. I get it. Now, if he'd lost his copyrights, he probably would have did that earlier, because you and I could have been making Washington shirts and making money off it. He didn't want that.
Right.
So now he's forced to do this. He has no choice.
Yep.
Now, I was waiting for the other owners to come out, but, you know, they wasn't going to say anything. They was like,
I mean, maybe they did behind the scenes. We don't know.
When Nike and Pepsi and FedEx and all these other came out, he didn't have no choice.
Okay, quick thought on Tomahawk Chop. Is that the next thing that should go?
No, the Braves, all that should go. I think Cleveland is probably going to be the next one to change their name.
I would agree with
that. But Skip, what's the Tomahawk? Because what do they do, Skip? The sound that they make when they make the chop. I don't get it. I will keep the name and do away with the chop. So I want to know, how do you prevent that, Skip? Mm. How do you prevent that in the stadium?
I don't know. You just have to make it an edict. You'd have to make it very public. This will not be tolerated anymore. And they would have to look to throw fans out who tried to start the chop. And after a while, maybe people would just abide by the new rule and just stop it, because they'd be ashamed. Because they should be ashamed,
yes,
of taking the tomahawk chop as a symbol. And remember, it started, I'm pretty sure, at Florida State University, yes, back in the 80s. Mm-hmm. They are called the Seminoles.
Right.
Okay. Where did the tomahawk come from? Well, it can't. It's to me, it's a racist symbol, or it's a sad symbol, mm-hmm, of the white people coming into this country, government settlers, and just declaring war on all Native American tribes all over this country. Mm-hmm. And some of the early wars were fought in the state of Florida,
right,
against the Seminoles. And guess who led the charge? The great General Andrew Jackson, who would soon become President of the United States.
Right.
And this went on his record as a big triumph.
Mm-hmm.
He defeated the Seminoles in the state of Florida.
Right.
And then you know what happened, because we've spoken about it. They became one of the five civilized tribes. Well, they were civilized because they got crushed. They got defeated.
Right.
And they were forced, along with four other tribes, to march all the way to what was then called Indian Territory, mm-hmm, state of Oklahoma. Oklahoma means red man. Mm-hmm. And forced to relocate. 10,000 people died on the march. It's called the Trail of Tears.
Right.
Well, that's such a pathetic legacy.
Skip, it's not hard to beat somebody if you got firearms and they got bow and arrows.
Right.
I mean, that's why America wins so many wars. We have so much more artillery than anybody that we're fighting against.
We just had so much more might.
Right.
We had numbers.
Yes.
And yet, they fought back.
Of course.
Did they? And once they got guns and horses, they fought back as hard as they could fight, and it went on for years.
Yes.
And there was a lot of bloodshed on both sides.
Yeah, they ambushing them. They know the landscape. They know the scape of the land. So they were, you know, ambushing and guerrilla warfare, rightfully so.
So the tomahawk chop was from the war that they lost, a war you're always talking about how the South lost.
Right.
Well, the Native Americans didn't start the war. We did.
Right.
Okay? We also finished the war.
Right.
But this is a symbol of the bloodshed,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Come on, it's just a bad idea. And remember when Dion then got drafted by the Falcons, yeah, and started to play for the Braves, mm-hmm, I think he suggested it first, mm-hmm, to Braves people, you should try this. And what did they accompany it with on the organ? It's a Native American war chant, that song, you know, I don't want to sing it,
yeah,
I have to pay for it.
I know exactly.
That goes along, that sort of, mm-hmm, starts it, mm-hmm, and fuels it. It's disrespectful to their culture. So remember, that is used by the Braves. And I don't have a problem with the Braves nickname. That is honoring,
right,
who they were.
Right.
They were literally brave.
Right, yeah.
And yet, Indians needs to go, but definitely the chop there. And guess where else? Kansas City.
They're going to revisit the Chiefs.
Got it. And I don't know if they'll revisit the nickname or,
yeah,
the chop.
I'm trying to think. I don't think they do.
They do the chop.
They do?
Yes, they do. I think it needs to go.
Maybe because we beat them so bad all the time, Skip, I guess that the chop ain't come
maybe
out.
Maybe.
Maybe that's what happened, Jenny.
Yep.
Makes sense.
No mercy.
The Undefeated published a column called The Humbling of Cam Newton. And the column suggests that race played a huge role in Cam Newton signing for just over $1 million and hardly garnering any attention from other teams in the league. It continued saying, quote, there's no explanation for such a small contract for a once transcendent talent other than a league of mostly white executives viewing Newton as not worth the headache, a reputation Newton has not earned. Fox Sports NFL analyst Michael Vick joining us now. Mike, good to have you. It has been way too long, and I want to start with you. How big of a role do you believe racism played in the lack of interest in Cam Newton?
I don't think race played a big role in this. I think this was more so about Cam and his ability to not be on the field the last 2 years. When I think about his transition, you know, going through the injuries and trying to work through it, you know, I think about my 2 year hiatus, you know, going through that transition and trying to work through it. And when I came back, I didn't expect a lot. I knew I had to go out and earn everything that I wanted. I didn't expect a, you know, $10 million contract. I didn't expect a $30 million contract. I knew because I had to be evaluated in short order that that was going to be the telltale sign of how, you know, I was perceived and what team I would go to, what money I would get, and will I play as soon as I wanted to play. You know, this is just a transition period for Cam, and I think it's going to help him more than it hurt him. You know, maturity-wise, a chance to step back, you know, look at his career, 9 years with the Panthers. What can I do moving forward? He's in a great spot with the New England Patriots. If it all goes well, Cam could be the long-term answer in New England. So I don't think race played a part of it. I think it was more so about the injury and being skeptical of what he could do coming back. Is he going to be the same? Got to evaluate him. And that's just the long and short of it.
But here's the thing, though, Mike. You do realize that Peyton Manning missed 19 months, had neck fusion surgery. Many of the doctors, even the coach team doctor, flunked him on the physicals. A lot of doctors would not pass him. He got $58 million to sign. Drew Brees ripped his arm out the socket. The Miami Dolphins flunked him on the physical. He got 6 years, $60 million with $10 million signing bonus. You see what we're seeing here, Mike, and I'm not saying, and I told Skip, I don't believe race was the predominant or the overwhelming factor, but I believe there is, because when you look at it, how many times you ever think, do you think that these general managers and owners, they ask white quarterbacks, do you got a tattoo? You have any piercings? Good, keep it that way. Dez Bryant, how many white players you think have ever been asked in a meeting, is your mom a prostitute? You see, it's undeniable. It's the elephant in the room, Mike. We don't like to talk about it, but we got to have these uncomfortable conversations. I can assure you, there has not been a general manager or player personnel director has ever asked a white quarterback whether his mom was a prostitute. You see, the thing is, from the time the inception of football in 1919 with the Acme Packer until 1968, there were no black quarterbacks. Marlon Briscoe with the Denver Broncos. You see, when they say act like a quarterback, what are they telling you to act like, Mike? Because that's all they meant. Huh?
That was pretty much, going back to the Marlon Briscoe days and you know, the first black quarterbacks to ever enter the league. Oh, yeah, it was definitely a different standard that we had to live up to. And, you know, the way we had to be, the way we had to walk and be perceived, you know, in terms of us getting that shot on the field. You know, we had to be squeaky clean. We had to be perfect. You know, that it wasn't the norm. It wasn't ideal. You know, I had a high school coach tell me that, you know, this world was very political. If you're going to play the quarterback position, then, you know, you have to look a certain way. You have to act a certain way. Part of the reason I made the comments when, you know, I was ignorant to the fact of what was going on with Kaepernick and, you know, in terms of him kneeling, you know, I didn't understand he was doing it for a certain cause. I was looking at it, the fact that he had an afro, and I'm, from what I've been told and taught, you know, this is the way you have to look, you know, similar to, you know, walking in the courtroom. You want to be at your best, you know, appearance-wise, in order to make the judge, you know, try to give you a lighter sentence. It's something that we was just told or taught. And, you know, like I said, I don't feel like, you know, that played a part, because when I think about Cam, I think about production. I think about, you know, the injuries. I think about him having to come from that. But, you know, it just didn't resonate with me that race played a part in this. And, you know, I don't know what goes on. And, you know, the general managers, you know, rooms when they're talking or when they're discussing players, I haven't had to witness that or be a part of that. You know, I know some guys have. You know, it's very unfortunate, but that's what we're trying to transition from, you know, as a country right now. You know, we're a work in progress, and I won't sit and speak on that because I think things are different from Cam in this situation currently.
So, Michael, go one cut deeper with us here, because this undefeated article we're discussing had a line in it that says, Michael Vick rubbed white America the wrong way long before Bad News Kennels. So,
I read that.
Okay, so help us out. Early in your Atlanta experience, did you feel sort of racial backlash? And again, you weren't nearly as sort of demonstrative as Cam is.
Flamboyant.
you didn't celebrate the way Cam does. Maybe you didn't exactly dress and look the part of the upstanding white quarterback, but did you feel any backlash in those early years in Atlanta?
Well, you know, I felt a lot of backlash just from my play. When I think about those times, you know, I think about the games that we lost, and then I was the one getting blamed for losing those games. I was more upset about that, whether it came from a black person or white person, than anything. You know, my play meant everything to me. Everything outside of that, I didn't see. Whether I was stereotyped because, you know, my pants was baggy or my shirt was
the Fat Farm and FUBU, Mike. I remember.
New Fat Farm, FUBU, the RP-55, all that shit, you know. I can care less. I can care less about that. It didn't bother me. And maybe it was because of the conversations that stemmed from, you know, the conversations I had with my coaches when I was young. And, you know, I just put football before anything outside of that. I wasn't worried about my appearance or what people thought about me. I could only be me. And when I read that article, I was very disturbed because I was like, I hadn't done anything up until what happened with Bad News Kennels to make people look at me a different way. I was the face of the franchise. Mm-hmm. You know, I was the face of the National Football League, and I was, you know, I was very young and immature at the time, but I embraced that. That meant something to me. So I tried to walk that fine line because I was always trying to set examples for the next generation to come after me. That's all.
So the criticism you didn't like was about the way you were playing football. And go be more specific about bolting the pocket too quick to make a big run or what?
Yeah, I mean, Skip, it was a lot of downs that I wish I could have had back, a lot of pass attempts that I wish would have been a different outcome, a lot of plays that was called that I wish would have been different. Mm. And you can point the finger, you can blame a lot of people. At the end of the day, I always blame myself. And, you know, I was a very tough critic on myself. But when it came to the public, sometimes they didn't know what they was talking about. When it came to media sources and certain people who probably just had a personal vendetta against me, I felt like they were very inaccurate. So I took it upon myself to defend myself at times. And maybe I didn't say the right things, or it made me go into a shell and not want to deal with these people. So now you start to look like, you know, you just don't care. And then, you know, you start getting tagged and labeled and scrutinized even more. And it just gets out of control. And once it gets to a point where you have no control over, you got to let go and just do your job, man. And that's all I ever tried to do. But it was very disturbing at times, and it was very heartbreaking. But I understood at the quarterback position, this is what you have to deal with. So you got to man up and deal with it.
Mike, you know, do you look back and say, you know what? Maybe I shouldn't have come, because you had the cornrows, you had the do-rag, you had the oversized T-shirt, you had the big chains hanging out. Do you look back and say, you know what? That might have caused people to look at me a certain way and judge me a certain way. It's like, this is not very CEO-like. This is not very quarterback-ish, because you was really the first guy. You what you did to the NFL is what Allen Iverson did to the NBA. Allen Iverson was showing up with oversized T-shirt, big jeans, do-rags, and cornrows, and people like, and they changed the rules. They changed the rules in the NBA. They didn't do that for the NFL, but do you think that looking back at it, maybe I should have done some things differently?
Absolutely, Shannon. Let me tell you this. I grew up four blocks away from Allen Iverson. He was 4 years older than me. He went to the NBA, and we looked at that as something that was so monumental. My dreams of following his footsteps started when I went to Virginia Tech. And everything that guy did, everything he did, I marveled. Everything he did, I wanted to patent. And I wanted to duplicate. And, you know, I could care less about who thought what people were thinking. And when I got to Atlanta and I started to, you know, dress a certain way and I started to just be myself, I wanted to be like Allen. And, you know, I didn't understand at the time that it looked different. You know, it wasn't the ideal way to dress. And, you know, now that I look back on it, you know, it disturbs me, but I'm appreciative of the fact that I did it my way, and I did it in a way where, you know, I think a lot of kids can learn from it. And I don't think it's really a big deal anymore. I think fashion is something that people pay attention to, and it's very trendy. And I will say this. Arthur Blank came to me when I was growing my braids out, and he told me he thought it looked good. He thought it was a cool look. He didn't care. You know, but that was my guy. That was my man. It didn't come from, you know, outside sources. You know, he gave me the blessing. And not saying he said he thought it was, you know, the right thing to do. Or he cared nothing about me growing my hair. It was about my play on the field. And I respected that more than anything. Hmm.
So, Michael, I told my man across the table, Shannon, earlier in the show, it's not like Cam Newton is the first black quarterback. Obviously, we brought up Marlon Briscoe, Denver, 1969, first to start a game in the modern era. We can go all the way back to Fritz Pollard, 1923, was a black quarterback. Yeah. And I counted last night, 98 black quarterbacks have started games in the National Football League in the modern era. It's not maybe great, but it's not bad. I don't think black quarterbacks have been routinely discriminated against in the draft because there have been 23 black quarterbacks taken in the first round. Five went first overall, including obviously you. So we come back to Cam. What's different about Cam? Well, he shattered a new mold. Nobody, black or white, has celebrated as a quarterback quite like Cam has. Is it fair to say that?
Yeah, I think it is. At the quarterback position,
yeah. Right, with the Superman, with the dab. And again, in 2015, America loved it because they were 15-1 on the way to the Super Bowl. But I told Shannon, in the end, it has been a little shocking to me that Cam didn't get a job with the Chargers, who I thought just desperately needed him to sell tickets to their brand-new billion-dollar stadium, or to Jacksonville, or to Chicago. We could go on and on. And if there is anything subliminally operating still in this league, there are a lot of older white men making the decisions. And maybe it's not a flat-out racist mindset that they have, but it's what I call an old-fashioned white mindset, that at that position, the most sacred position in pro football, you have to act a certain way. And Cam does not.
Nope.
So as long as he was going 15-1, okay, we're okay with that. But he's, over the last 4 years, 23-23 as a starter. Well, now you haven't bought any insurance with those older white, you know, old-fashioned decision makers who probably were raised racist by their parents, and maybe they're not racist now, but they have a white mindset of that's how that position is supposed to be played. And that's how you're supposed to act at that position. Mm-hmm. And when he does not, when he posts his Instagram posts, it can be a little out there sometimes, I think the white decision makers say, well, I don't know. I'm not sure I'm going to go there with Cam just yet.
It's only 32 teams in the National Football League. And it's only 32 quarterbacks that can represent their team on Sundays. And I think for the most part, where it all starts, is your production. This league is a what have you done for me lately league, and that's never going to change. In terms of attitudes and in terms of maturity level, that'll always be scrutinized. White, black, and indifferent, you'll always be, you know, judged based on how, you know, you treat the guys around you. If you're a leader within the locker room, if you're a leader on the field, how you treat, you know, the guys in the upper management, you know, how you treat the scouts, how you treat the ball boys, how you treat people when you're out in the community, you know, how you, you know, carry yourself, you know, 24 hours out of the day. That's what it's going to come down to, black, white, and different at the quarterback position. And look, that's just how I carried it. That's how I, you know, made my mark in the National Football League. Look, you respect me, I respect you. Respect my boundaries, I respect yours. And we don't have to take it anywhere no further than that. you know, leave it right there. And that's where I stood. Look, regardless of my color, I never cared. You know, treat me fair, I treat you fair.
Well, Nathan Peterman and Chase Daniels must be treating everybody really, really well, because they couldn't play dead in a horror movie, and they got Ben Mink and more money than Cam Newton. That's all I'm going to say about that, Vic.
Cam's gonna get his money, man. I didn't expect Cam to make a lot of money. I mean, Shandy, I mean, be honest. Did you expect Cam to get a 10-year contract?
No, 10-year deal? I expected him to get like $8-9 million. I didn't expect him to get $500,000.
Yeah, I'm with you.
You got to go work for it. Let me tell you, my first contract was only $1 million. It had an option for $5 million. You know what I did, Shannon? I went and got that $5 million. And after that, I went and got some more.
Mike, think about how long ago that's been. That's been 12, 13 years. And you got making $450,000 more in guaranteed money than what Cam got.
And Shannon, that's why I was saying, coming off that injury, he got to show that he can still whip it. He got to show that he can still run it. He got to show that he can still. And look, I would tell Cam the same thing if I talked to him today. Cam, you know you have to go show and prove. Sky's the limit for you. It's right there in front of you. And he got to be excited about that. He got to be hungry. And according to his videos and what he done posted and what he's been showing, let's sit back and watch what happened.
Yeah, according to those videos, you're right, Michael. He looks ready. He's saying it's about respect, not about the money. And we're going to be watching to see how it all plays out for him.
No mercy.
After yesterday's deadline passed without Dak and the Cowboys agreeing on a long-term extension, his older brother, Tad Prescott, tweeted, quote, "There's a reason I was never a Dallas Cowboys fan growing up or before they drafted Dak. And after today, who knows how much longer I'll be cheering for them." And according to Jane Slater, Dak wanted to get a deal done at the last minute, but it was just too late and they ran out of time. So, Skip, I do want to start with you. And trust me, I saw the photo of you laying on the ground.
Yep.
You posted on social media, defeated. How did this make you feel?
Figuratively, I'm still prone on the ground. I'm out. And I tweeted a picture because Hazel walked into the picture and starts licking my face to revive me, like she thought I'd passed out, because I had. So, Mr. Sharp, there were two flashpoint moments yesterday. After a year and 3 months of talking and talking and talking and talking about this story, till both of us are like cowboy blue in the face. Mm-hmm. First came Jane Slater's tweet, and I went from elation, because it hit me for a split second, Dak wanted to get a deal done. Mm-hmm. Maybe there was some thawing. Maybe there was some compromising. Is it possible they just ran right up against the 4 Eastern deadline and they just didn't get finished? And then I sat back and started thinking, not Jerry Jones. All he does is make deals on and off the field. On the football field and in the oil field, he just makes deals. Mm-hmm. He's not going to blow a deadline for something this important. Todd France is a super agent. He represents Aaron Donald, DeAndre Hopkins, and Fletcher Cox. He's not going to blow a deadline. It can't be.
Right.
And then I hit the floor because I hit abject deflation when I saw the tweet from the older brother of Dak Prescott named Tad Prescott. And that's when it hit me that the bad blood has gone from dripping to gushing. Mm-hmm. Gushing. Because I believe that Tad Prescott had just talked to his younger brother, Dak Prescott. And I believe he was speaking for Dak Prescott when he tweeted. Mm-hmm. What does Shannon Sharp always tell me? Anybody close,
family,
sibling, anybody, yep. You know, then you're basically, everybody's going to leap to the conclusion you are speaking for because you have spoken to.
Yep.
Am I right?
Absolutely.
And I leaped to that conclusion, and I leaped right over the cliff onto the floor. That's where I am, because this was a dark day for Cowboy Nation. This feels like the beginning of the end.
Because his tweet didn't sound like the deal was close.
Not at all. So in the end, as I respect hugely Jane Slater's reporting. She does an excellent job. And I believe one side or the other told her, we actually tried to get the deal done. I'm going to just guess that it came more from the Jerry Stevens side, because they are taking a PR beating. They are right now the easiest targets in sports, because it's easy to say, why didn't you just pay the man?
Right.
And they are saying, well, gee, at the last second, we actually went back one more time and said, here's the deal, mm-hmm. but it's pretty much the same deal they were offering.
Right.
Do I think it was a fair deal? I do. I'm not going to say it was an all-time great, you know, one of the offer you can't refuse. Right. It wasn't that.
It was a respectable deal.
It was respectable because it was 35 and 35 mm-hmm. for the first 2 years. If you add those two up, that's $70 million. The tags, if you go 1 and 1 for the next 2 years, 31-4 and 37-7. Right. So the 35 and 35, if I'm doing the math correctly, is a little bit more right. than the two tags. So that was fair. And if Jane Slater's reporting is right, and I do believe it, $80 million guaranteed at signing is significantly more than Carson Wentz absolutely. Or Jared Goff got.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's let's just say it's a credible deal. Mm-hmm. It's a fair deal. And I believe Dak and his agent had dug in because he's saying, I'm better than this. Mm-hmm. I'm way better than these right. guys. Even though my average annual will be above them, mm-hmm. I want to go north of 40. Mm-hmm. I want to get up at least in the Patrick Mahomes region. This is where Dak lost me. This is where I'm disappointed in him and his agent because I do think it's still a big deal to be the quarterback of America's team. I still think it's a big deal to be able to quarterback what Pro Football Focus calls next year the three best wideouts in the game. And I do think it's a big deal to get to have 12, 13, 14 off-the-field commercials mm-hmm. that you're making, national TV commercials. I'm not counting that as part of your package. It's just part of the aura and mystique of being the Cowboy quarterback. So in the end, it's a horrible outcome because now he's on the tag and up against it for two straight years, we think. And the only way out of this is to go win a Super Bowl. And I don't love the odds. I'm not going to proclaim them. I thought they could get to the Super Bowl last year. Maybe if they had, we wouldn't be having this conversation. Maybe that would have just forced Jerry to go right over the edge and say, I got to give you $40-plus million. I think he would have been more prone to do it. But in the end, I'm going to say this one more time. I saw this bad blood coming. Mm-hmm. It started back in September.
Yep.
I believe that Jerry thought a deal was almost done mm-hmm. because he said it's imminent after game number one. And all of a sudden, Todd France goes back and says, Jerry, the price just went way
yep.
up.
Yep.
And Jerry has a quick temper, and he's got a lasting temper. See Jimmy Johnson.
Uh-huh.
And once he lost his temper, I think this deal had no chance of getting done. And once it was lost, what did I suggest to you? Why don't they just cut bait here? If this is never going to work out, if this is the beginning of the end of Dak Prescott in Dallas, go get Tom Brady. I'm not laughing or joking about this.
Right.
I'm not being facetious. Go get Brady, pay him 25 and 25, a lot less than the tag, 34.1, right. and take your shots. Take two Super Bowl shots, a lot of talent, defense is better. Mm-hmm. See if he could do for Dallas what a lot of people think he's going to do in Tampa Bay.
Right.
Just take two shots with Tom Brady, then start over. Go get somebody in the draft. Go sign the best free agent, whatever, because this feels sour to me. Mm-hmm. This feels like spilled milk that's right. going sour fast,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
Well, skip so it. I'm left feeling like it's a dirty thing, like everybody done each other wrong here.
Skip, you guys could have had this contract done. Had you done what you were supposed to
yep.
do, not let Wentz, not let Goff sign before Dak, because once he saw those guys, he wasn't going to take less than them with 2 years left on his contract. You could have had this done and moved on, and we could have been talking about, oh, everything's going to be, as you like to say, you're going to be able to launch into the season.
Yep.
But because you didn't, and plus Dak is looking, he says, hold on, Jerry Jones, you've had no problem paying them offensive linemen.
That
you had no problem
yep.
playing Zeke. No problem playing D-Law
yep.
and Jalen Smith. Now it comes to me. It seems to be a problem. It seems to be that you're unsure.
Yep.
Skip, this notion that they were up against, Skip, it's like at the beginning of the year, the teacher gave you an assignment. Say, you're going to have a term paper. It's due on the last day of class.
Mm-hmm.
It needs to be at least 25 pages on a 400-page book. And you wait till the night before and says, I'm up against the deadline.
Mm-hmm.
When you know D well, you had the whole semester to get that done. Skip, they had from February of last year, 2019, until July 15th of 2020. And you talk about a deadline? What deadline?
You missed the deadline? I don't
Man, that's like somebody bad. Man, I was going to have me a 50th birthday party. You 49. Huh? You know 50 was coming up.
What?
Oh, man, I was going to have that thing. That thing was going to be lit, but you know, man, that thing snuck up on me.
Or you forgot your 50th birthday.
Exactly.
You missed the deadline. I don't think you're going to miss the deadline.
And plus, Dak knows, Skip, this is what Dak knows. Anytime there's a shortage of something, the price skyrocket. Mm-hmm. Skip, I'm trying to go to the store and get a Lysol wipes and all that. Mm-hmm. Can't find them. But when you do find them, I'm like, hold on. Just 5 months ago, this thing was $2 for 3-pack.
Yep.
Now you're charging me 10 for one?
Mm-hmm. Good point.
Dak said, hold on, quarterback shortage out there.
Yep.
I know the good one, I consider myself a good one, no matter what they think of me.
Yep.
I consider myself a good one. Now, let me tell you what's going to happen, Skip. There's a good chance that Deshaun Watson going to sign a contract.
Yep.
And he going to be 40 or damn near 40.
I believe he'll be 40-plus, yeah.
Now, guess what?
Should be.
There's another guy that won the MVP last year, unanimous. Now, he comes back and put together another season. He's going to be 40.
Agreed.
He
could be 50.
How do you expect Dak to ever take another $30 million contract when he's seen guys before and after him get 40-plus?
Is Dak better than Deshaun?
No.
Is Dak better than Lamar?
No. But here's the thing.
Is Dak better than Mahomes? Obviously not.
But, Skip, it's the one position that when you come up, it's not
being there.
It's being last to sign.
All right. Now, here I will criticize Jerry Jones. The Bible says pride goeth before the fall. Jerry has huge pride. And it can just flip angry at a moment's notice.
Yes.
And once it goes angry, it's hard for him to get it back.
Mm-hmm.
I think he got angry back in September. Yahoo reported he was mad at Todd France, the agent, and miffed at Dak. And I don't think Jerry ever could quite let it go.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes his feelings he will prioritize more than winning.
Right.
Sometimes.
Right.
And in this case, I believe he became alienated from Dak Prescott because Dak never tried to play son to him. Dak never tried to kiss up, buddy up.
Dak ain't going on no vacation with the Jones family.
Nope. He is not doing what Tony Romo used to do or what a lot of stars.
Yeah.
Michael Irvin, Dez Bryant, Zeke.
Go over to the highs and eat.
Yes. Nope. And because of that, the distance has grown between the quarterback and the owner. And because the owner, in the end, his pride is paramount to him. It's all about pride. It's about manhood. It's about, and if he feels like you've done him wrong, I'm just not sure it's ever going to get healed.
I'm seriously not.
Yeah. That's how he is built.
Mm-hmm.
And this man is very proud in a good way himself.
Right.
And it's how he's built. Boom. Clash. Right. It just feels like it's heading the wrong direction. It feels like he's heading out of town.
Skip, you know how this, the older generation.
Yep.
Skip, they stuck in their ways.
Mm.
When something happens, stick a fork in. Ain't no sense in talking to daddy. You know how he is. Let it go.
That's what, trust me. That's what those Jones kids say about daddy.
Yeah.
You know how he is.
Hey, they said the same thing about my grandfather. We knew why he was.
Yep.
Ain't no sense in wasting. I might need this breath somewhere down the line. Ain't no sense in me wasting trying to change your mind.
No mercy.